Excuse me, recording has started.
Great. Thank you so much, Rose. Well, welcome, everyone. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all. Welcome to the IGO-INGO-PDB Working Group on Red Cross Names call on Thursday, the 10th of May, 2018. On the call today, we do have Heather Forrest, Thomas Rickert, Chuck Gomes, Thomas Chang, and David Maher. We do have apologies from Christopher Lamb. From ICANN staff, we have Mary Wong, Barry Cobb, Steve Chan, and myself, Michelle DeSmiter. As a reminder, if you would please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you, and I'll turn the meeting back over to Thomas Rigger.
Thanks so much, and good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone, to this Red Cross Red Crescent meeting. Let's start with a roll call, which we're going to take from the remote participation room. So let me ask whether there are any participants that are on the audio bridge only. I understand that Dennis Chang has only dialed in, but are there more participants that we can't see as participants in the remote participation room? That does not seem to be the case, so we will take the attendees from that from the remote participation room. Are there any questions with respect to the agenda? So that doesn't seem to be the case. So we have the agenda confirmed. Also, as usual, let me ask whether there are any updates to statements of interest. That does not seem to be the case. So we can move to the second point on the agenda. And before we do so, let me just put on the record that the number of attendees is very low. We have a group consisting of ICANN staff and of representatives of the GNSO primarily. So I would have hoped that we get a little broader community representation on this call. Therefore, this group will just take informal decisions on the points that we need to discuss and put out the minutes of the recommendations, basically, that this group comes up with during this call, put that out to the list, and let all the other participants that couldn't make it for today's call chime in so that we can confirm whether there is full group consensus or a lack thereof subsequently on the mailing list. The second agenda item is the review of the definitive list of National Society names and variation reviews, separate email that was sent by Barry, thankfully, and let me applaud Barry and his colleagues. They did a splendid job in working on the list that thankfully Stefan and his colleagues prepared. So Barry, would it be possible for you to show us through the list of open issues / questions that arose when the list was analyzed? Because there does seem to be a quite long list of things that haven't been discussed previously by this group, i.e. there are some strings on the list that deviate from the syntax / parameters that this group has previously agreed upon. So over to you, Barry.
Thank you very much, Thomas, Barry Cobb, for the transcript. First, let me start by apologizing to our European colleagues. When I scheduled this a few weeks ago, I wasn't aware that it was a bank holiday, and thus our smaller turnout. Secondarily, I'd like to, as you've noted or noticed on the list, Stefan Hankins and his team did deliver a draft of the entire definitive list of the International Olympic Committee and International Federation of Red Cross Societies, as well as 191 national societies per a spreadsheet or a format that this group had previously reviewed. And I'll talk a little bit more about that in a second. But first, I'd like to thank Stefan for them doing this work. It was yeoman's work to liaise with that many different groups. to acquire the various identifiers that would be protected. I know that it took me a while to review through all of them, so I can't imagine how much work it was for them to actually construct the list. So that said, I did send around a version 2 of the spreadsheet. Stefan had sent version 1 on the 30th of April. Off the list about 4 or 5 days later, he had sent an update on a couple of societies that had sent in some slight changes. So that version 2 that we're working from and reviewing today is the latest and greatest copy of that. So for those on the call, you have two choices. One, you can bring up the spreadsheet yourself and try to follow along from that perspective. I'm also going to share my screen and try to walk through some of the highlights that I found, and whichever one works easiest for you, and I'll try to be diligent about telling you where I am in the spreadsheet when we're reviewing that. So let me share. And as I understand from Michelle, if you can also go to full view within the WebEx room to hopefully see some of the spreadsheet content that I'm sharing now. So just a reminder for the group, the reason why we constructed the spreadsheet the way that we did was based on principles that are essentially lessons learned from staff in implementing prior IGO, INGO recommendations where the consensus policy becomes effective, I believe, in October 2018, and also based on lessons learned of providing temporary reservation protections for these strings. Ultimately, it was difficult to maintain a chain of custody as to what identifier belonged to which formal name or which national society. And it was the idea here was to try to streamline the approach and so that we can do an appropriate inventory and make a connection back to the formal name, as well as, you know, one of the complications is when we're dealing with those identifiers that are not in English, and unfortunately, I only speak American, so anything non-American is, and I do see Stefan Hankins has joined the call. Thank you for joining. But the intent, again, from the spreadsheet is really to be able to, once the definitive list is completed and agreed upon by the working group, and then, of course, it goes through the paces of sending report to the council for their potential adoption, and if it's adopted by the board and it becomes implemented by ICANN.org, the idea is that essentially we would be able to easily copy the protected identifiers, put them into a single list, and then run them through this algorithm that will create the actual DNS labels that will be applied to the specification 5 and or reservation sheets that the registry agreements refer to, by which is essentially converted into an XML file that the registry operators can then take that XML file, upload it into their EPP systems, and reserve these names from actual registration. So that's, again, still the intent of the spreadsheet and the way that it's laid out the way it is. And, of course, again, referring back to non-English languages, we thought it would be helpful to also include which language that particular string was applied to, just in case that there were any issues in terms of converting these identifiers into the DNS labels, and that would allow kind of a breadcrumb to where we can work through those non-Latin script, non-English labels. Okay, so within, and if Thomas, if you see any hands raised or you need to interject, I can't see anything in the WebEx room, so please just interrupt me if anybody has any questions, and I'll be glad to pause.
So, thanks for asking, Barry. No hands raised at the moment.
All right, thank you, sir. So basically, there are two tabs within the spreadsheet that are important. The first one was the easiest one, which just outlines the International Committee of the Red Cross and the International Federation of the Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies. The original working group recommendation was that these identifiers would be protected in the UN 6. What I had noticed from the list that was sent from Stefan and what you see highlighted here in red looks to be when the Afghanistan National Society had their attempt at, or when they were reviewing this list and adding their respective identifiers, they also wanted to add the other two official languages. So I don't think that this is anything that this working group has discussed, and that definitely goes beyond the scope of the original recommendation of the UN 6. I just wanted to highlight it here because that one is out of scope, and likely these will be deleted from this tab. And the one other thing, again, that I want to, I guess, emphasize is that my desire of managing this master list to get to the definitive scope of all identifiers is that eventually whatever identifiers are not adopted by the working group, that they be removed from this master list, so that by the time we package this up to be delivered to the GNSO Council, it will be only those approved identifiers and none of the outliers that we'll be reviewing through today. So absent any objections, I suspect that the group would agree that these two additional languages from Dari and Pashto from Afghanistan would be removed from this list. And I'll pause for a second if there's any objections to that. And I see agreement from Chuck. Okay. All right. Let's get down to the heart of the matter. So the second tab is the list of the 191 national societies and the variations of those strings. The group will recall in prior deliberations that I think was first kind of started by the principles that staff had put forward about, again, this reconciliation / chain of custody, being able to document what the scope of variations would be that helped define this list. In the email I sent yesterday, which I will slide over here for you to see, there were basically two links to emails that had been sent from the Red Cross representatives, the first one being in February 2018. The scope of that email was our first exercise was to acquire about 10 or so national society identifiers and bring them back to the group for review to see or ensure that we were on the correct path. And within that email, Stefan had taken a draft version on the scope of variations from the formal name to the common names and things like language and the use of the definite article and that stuff. And he did a great job elaborating on that list. And then secondarily, when he sent the full 191 National Society names at the end of April, there were also a couple of comments that were of relevance that take us back to the spreadsheet that we see before us. So, and then I'll just note that within an email that I sent this morning that contains a draft of the proposed recommendations, that variant criteria is a crucial component to one of the recommendations around the definitive list. And after we kind of run through the rest of these identifiers, then we'll switch over and we can pay more attention to that variant matrix when we get to it. So a couple of highlights here. In reviewing through every row, essentially, and by every national society, what immediately stuck out to me, and I believe Stefan had also identified in his email, is that several of the national societies actually, in fact, use the word national. I don't recall the exact count. I would say it was probably at least 20 or 30 different national societies. So there is consistent use of that term. And the main reason I'm highlighting it is that particular term wasn't documented in our variation matrix. And so then the question for the group is, you know, first, should the use of this term national be allowed in the variation matrix? And if it is, then we just need to make sure we document it. And I'll just note that for the draft recommendations, because there seemed to be some pretty consistent use, I have included that into that draft variant matrix, but we can circle back on that. The second thing that popped out that we didn't document in our variant matrix was the variation use of nationality versus country. And one of those examples would be the Ethiopian Red Cross Society versus Ethiopia Red Cross Society. That was also very prevalent, and I believe that occurred for probably 50-plus different national societies, and there seemed to be consistent use across that. For example, even here with the very first row, we have the Afghan Red Crescent, but we also have the Afghanistan Red Crescent, or similarly with the Albanian Red Cross versus Albania Red Cross. So again, I just wanted to highlight that there were this additional variation that we didn't have highlighted in our variant matrix. And it seemed like it was consistently used and still consistently in line with what the working group had agreed. So I have added it to the draft, and the group can come back around to see if that's acceptable. The third thing I'd like to highlight, which Stefan pointed out in his email, is that for linguistic versions and translations of the identifier, there was a few. So essentially columns E, F, and on are to identify the non-English, non-Latin character identifiers to be protected. And the only reason for that, again, was to draw this connection back to the easier for me to read the English version of that identifier. But in some cases, there wasn't an English version available. And what Stefan had pointed out is ultimately there wasn't a translation of a particular non-English identifier back into English and therefore was left blank, which still kind of creates this chain of custody. We just don't have an easy-to-read English version as to where that comes from, but ultimately it still is connected to column C, the formal name of that national society. So I'm mostly just bringing it to your attention because it's mostly to benefit myself and staff when we start to work with this list and we have a better understanding of what this inventory is going to look like, and again, referencing back to that chain of custody. So I'm going to pause there before I get into any other details, any comments or questions for anything that I've mentioned thus far.
Go ahead, Chuck. I just wanted to say that there were no hands raised.
I didn't raise my hand because I was scrolling through the spreadsheet of the national the tab that has the National Society. So, oh, there I go. So I see there are some in the English column one that are blank. So now I follow. Okay, I just wanted to confirm that. I'm good. Okay.
Great. Thank you, Chuck. As we move down the list, I think I still have one or two of those identified, so you'll see that. But, yeah, I should have displayed that for you in the screen to make that explanation more clear.
No, that's okay. I'm good. This is Chuck again, and I'm good with that. I wonder if, and I don't know if it would be confusing or not, if in that table we ought to just insert a parenthetical in those cases that there's no available English translation. But I don't feel strongly about that. It's just a thought. Thanks.
Great. Duly noted, Chuck. In fact, my intent is that as this spreadsheet matures, I'm going to create an additional tab of footnotes or disclaimers for a lot of this so that there is a connection. What I do want to avoid is anything in columns D through column 6 way over here to the right that is anything but the actual identifiers themselves, because this is going to be extracted out, as I mentioned earlier, to get into that DNS label. But for documentation purposes, yes, I agree with you that we need to highlight that and make it easily readable.
Yeah, that makes sense, and I understand why you might not put it in the column itself. That's good. This is Chuck again.
Thank you, sir. Okay, so now from the kind of the I guess shopping list, for lack of a better word, of reviewing through these, I'm going to jump into the details. I don't want to get into all of these, but there are a few that I do want to highlight for the group to consider and understand how we can navigate around this. But predominantly, you know, the kind of the fourth biggest outlier that you'll have noticed in reviewing the spreadsheet is that there are several that were highlighted in yellow. And Stefan can correct me if I'm wrong, but what is going on here is that in their engagement with the various national societies, they have learned that often several of these societies refer to the parent level or the more, for lack of a better word, but the more formal name of the International Federation of Red Crescent Red Cross Society names, as opposed to their in-country national society that they are more referenced, or that has what had been formally adopted via the Geneva Convention. So the intent of this highlight, and in some cases also included a translation. So Heather, for example, which is this row 16 right here on the shared screen. And for those that aren't looking at the shared screen, I'm on the fourth tab of the spreadsheet titled National Societies, row 16. Thank you, Heather. So I believe there's probably, I don't know, 35 or 40 instances where this highlighted yellow cell will appear. The intent for Stefan to do that was mostly for documentation purposes and to just, again, reinforce that there are instances where these national societies use the parent-level organization name, mostly if for anything else, because it's short and sweet, as opposed to always having to rely on the Red Crescent Society of Afghanistan. But I'll just note that Stefan's intent was only for documentation purposes, and there is no intent to actually have these names as listed in these yellow cells reserved. And so the list that I had sent to the mailing list yesterday, I still made a notion of or a note of what row where those existed, because in terms of maturing this list and ready making it ready for distribution and use down the road, again, we'll want to delete out any identifiers that are not within scope for the protections here. And so just, again, referring back to my email yesterday, probably about the fifth bullet or so highlights row 16, which is supposed to say the Red Crescent. And then, of course, they have this translation in Dari and Pashto as well. So, again, just to kind of reconfirm that after the group has worked through this definitive list, eventually these will be deleted. I noticed that Heather had mentioned in the chat, is there a legend that describes all of this? Not yet. However, within the draft preliminary recommendations document, I've made reference back to this variant matrix that will describe how these variations of common names are formed off of the official name, as well as guidance around the language and the use of definitive article, or whether there's the use of society or the use or non-use of national, et cetera. And we'll walk through that in detail, because not only does that shape the creation of the list before us, but it will be the kind of checklist in the future that should there be additions of new societies formed, that will guide the creation of those identifiers for those new societies that would be eventually passed back to ICANN to update the reservation list. I guess just to kind of complete the answer to you, Heather, yes. And as a part of this spreadsheet, like I said, we'll create an additional tab that has that will list out all of these kind of outliers or things to be aware of, as well as kind of a legend of sorts to navigate through this. Okay, I'm still on the fourth tab of the spreadsheet, and now I'm going to move to row 170 and 71. And again, this is just to kind of re-highlight the exact, it's just another example of what we just discussed. The National Society of Azerbaijan also heavily make reference to Red Crescent Society and Red Crescent. And I think the term here, Red Crescent, being used here on row 71 is of particular value here, because the term Red Crescent is already reserved. It is already confirmed by the consensus policy that was implemented by Dennis's team that becomes effective, again, October 2018, I believe, or August, in the next several months from now. But the scope of that reservation of the Red Cross, Red Crescent, Red Lion, and Sun, again, was only within the UN6, but their use of Red Crescent as a part of Azerbaijani or Russian is out of scope in terms of that original recommendation, thus why it's highlighted yellow, and thus why it would eventually be deleted from this spreadsheet when we mature it, finalize it, and again, prepare it to for extraction of these identifiers to go through the algorithm to create the DNS labels. Okay, I'm going to move on row 293, I believe, is another example. Here we get the full spectrum, Red Cross, the Red Cross Society. Again, two of those, well, the Red Cross itself is reserved, but again in the UN 6, but they use these parent type organizations or these short forms of the Red Cross Society within that region. As I've mentioned, these will be deleted. So now let's move on to row 332, which I believe is one that did stick out. And Stefan, in his email, had also mentioned this. So the British Red Cross Society, in addition to the variations in their common names per our use of or per our definition of these variants are fine, but there was one outlier here, and this is the use of Red Cross Charity. First and foremost, the term charity wasn't identified in our variant list, and I'll also point out that this is one particular term that is only used once. And so I do think that the working group needs to make a determination here. Is this single-use outlier worthy of incorporation into the variant matrix that we, you know, that we have defined, or do we keep it? Do we have it removed because of just this one outlier?
Barry.
Please, Thomas, go ahead.
No, it's Stefan, actually. Stefan, go ahead.
It's Stefan Hankins speaking here for the record. So I'm sorry, I had problems joining the beginning of the session, but I thank you very much for all the work that Barry and colleagues have put into this. Just to explain a little bit this particular aspect, and I think in the previous conversations that we had, I think I tried to underline that we would need, in exceptional cases, some level of flexibility to some of these criteria. And one of them we've already examined, which is, you know, national societies of the Red Cross or Red Crescent that are known in their context by the short name, and that, you know, that's the usual name by which they are called and known. Therefore, you know, the legitimacy of having them, those names reserved in the national language. The another exception, or the second exception, is indeed, you know, where national societies requested that their legal form be indicated as part of one of the reserved designations. So, indeed, the British Red Cross asked, you know, that the name, the words Red Cross Charity, be reserved, and there are other cases that are similar where national societies asked for their names to be reserved with another legal designation. So there are other cases, but in all the other cases, it's in a foreign, another language than English. The British Red Cross Charity case, or the is unique in the English column, but you have other cases in the list. So I want to highlight them because we're going to come to them. But there are national societies that, for example, requested that, you know, their names be reserved not with the designation society, but with words such as association, organization, authority, or non-governmental organization, as in the case of Russia, the UAE Red Crescent Society, the Saudi Arabian Red Crescent Society asked that their name to be reserved as authority, because that is actually their official name and their legislation of recognition domestically. So it's a cluster of limited exceptions that we're looking at. the Red Cross charity is one that the British Red Cross came up with, but there are five or six others in the list which are similar, which try to ensure that the official name of the society, which may not be registered in domestic law as a national society, or but in another legal form. So it can be charity, as I said, it can be association, non-governmental organization, charity organization. I think there's five or six similar cases, but again, the others are not in English. They're in the foreign language only. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Stefan. We have Heather's hand raised. Heather, go ahead.
Thanks very much. So I think Stefan has answered my question at the end of his last intervention there, which was to say, I put my hand up when it was mentioned that this was the legal name, and I was wondering what that meant. So I understand from what Stefan has just said that legal name means, let's say, pursuant to the laws of a particular jurisdiction. It wasn't quite clear to me if that meant trademark, if that meant some sort of a statutory name in a particular jurisdiction or so on. I wonder, given that there are a number of different possibilities by which you might call something a legal name, for example, the use of the term association might come from, for example, a national business register, whereas another version of a name might come from the trademarks register, whereas another version might come from legislation. Should we be recording and B, should we be looking for proof of these and somehow appending that to this document just as a complete record? Thanks very much, Thomas.
Thanks very much, Heather. Any further comments? That doesn't seem to be the case. So, Barry, why don't you continue then?
Right. Thank you, Thomas. So I guess I would like to add on to this. I think what's going to be very critical, let me back up. As personally or as staff, we don't have a dog in the hunt, or we don't have any say as to what should get reserved or what shouldn't. But I think as we mature the report and we mature this list, that as Mary mentioned in the chat, we need to identify these outliers if they're going to be used. I think from a staff perspective, or the concern here is not so much coming to a conclusion with this finite list and getting it implemented, but where confusion may occur down the road is if a new society is formed and there are identifiers that are being proposed that may not be in line with the guidance of our variant definitions. And I think one term that Stefan had mentioned was the flexibility based on legal name. So I guess the point I want to make here is that staff is going to need guidance from the group on how we can navigate around that and document it in a way so that when a new society is formed, ICANN is not in the position of judging whether this is in or out, and creating a discussion about why it should be in or why it should be out. So definitely note that, and staff will appreciate any guidance from the group to make sure that we go through that. Please, Thomas, go ahead.
Yeah, I guess the only point that I would make at this stage is that, as has been said in the chat and on the phone bridge, we need to explain what this is. I guess the outliers need to be put into a separate recommendation so that the GNSO Council has an opportunity to carve that out if necessary. And, you know, so that would be the former approach. And I also think that with only a handful of potential new additions to the list, you know, because there are only a couple of countries that could be added to the whole list of national societies, I think we would need to close it down and say that, you know, this type of exceptions is limited to what we have in the finite list, so that ICANN staff doesn't have to speculate over what outliers might be acceptable and which aren't. Does that make sense to you?
Yes, thank you. Much better, well put than what I tried to state. And I guess kind of continuing on with the example, because Stefan had also mentioned association, and I had browsed by row 321, where within the variations of the common names, which are, I guess, are legal names, you know, the Brazilian Red Cross is listed here, as well as it's a non-English equivalent. But then as well, they've also asked for Brazilian Red Cross Association. And the use of the term association, I think, is probably a candidate to add to our variant index or variant guide, because I do see it several times. But again, as you pointed out, Thomas, let's identify these. We can kind of keep them separate from... we can keep them separate from in terms of how the council will make a decision on this, and if they don't buy into it, that it can easily be carved out. Okay, so I'm only going to go through a couple of more examples because I'd really like to spend more time on the draft recommendations, but these are what I'm about to highlight are some things that we're going to want to change and address as well. So I'm going to move to rows 489 through 498, which is the Red Cross Society. Nope, sorry. Oh, yes. So, which is part of the Red Cross Society of China. So, first and foremost, what I noticed here is that there's also a use of a new term, headquarters. There's use of a new term or a term that we didn't have identified in our variant index, which was association. But most importantly, what stood out to me is the use of the forward slash. And so really, I guess this question is for Stefan. Is this how these common names are recognized in that country with the use of these forward slashes? And if so, is there any objection to deleting them? Because they won't work as DNS labels. They would effectively be ignored. But what I would, my preference would be for readying this list for that eventual conversion is that these slashes and non-DNS label type characters would be deleted out just for the sake of trying to keep it clean.
Barry, I think it's Stefan Henkin speaking for the record. This is a question to me, right?
Yes, sir, please.
Yeah. Well, yes, I actually, you know, my knowledge of Chinese is limited. I basically, you know, in this case, we relied on our delegation in Beijing and on the names that the Chinese Red Cross submitted. This is how we received them. I think in the English version, as you see, there are four of those names that we actually didn't we inserted in yellow, which means that you know their protections in English are not proposed or recommended for the names in the yellow in the yellow sections. But for the others, yes, indeed, I see that there are slashes. I think it's not an issue at all. I think to take them out because obviously it's probably in a case like this it will be the Chinese names that we will want to ensure are in a correct form in Chinese. So I think there's something that probably we could have taken out ourselves, but we didn't. It's no problem to take out the dash.
Great. Thank you, sir. And I guess you do kind of raise an interesting point, and I, like you, have no experience in the Chinese languages at all, which makes me wonder if, is it possible that these types of non-Latin characters or, these forward slashes, are they even translatable, and do they show up in these strings? According to Mary, there is no hyphen or slash equivalent in the Chinese language, so I think we're good for this one.
Yeah.
All right. Great. Thank you. So, go ahead, Stefan.
No, I agree. I see. Actually, we in this case we just transcribed what was received. Certainly I don't see dashes in the Chinese script either, so it's fine to take them out, I think.
Great, thank you. And just because it's here, I'll just note for the record that the Red Cross Society of China also has, there's a reconciliation difference here, and that the Red Cross Society of China is translated both in Mandarin and traditional here. And so that's what's going on in that. So the reason that's kind of separate from what we discussed earlier is we don't want to repeat the same English string when there are two translations of it. And so what I'll be doing is actually merging this particular cell, which isn't showing up that the way that we'll need it for that reconciliation aspect. Okay, moving on is going to be row 559, and I believe what we just discussed with China will probably occur with Cote d'Ivoire. Obviously, for the non-English names listed in column two, it's clear that when these identifiers are converted into DNS labels. Oh, I'm sorry. Mary wants to go back to the Chinese list real quick. Mary, do you want to speak? Please go ahead.
Yeah, if you don't mind, Barry, Thomas, and everyone, this is Mary from staff. It just took me a while to get out full screen and raise my hand. So what I noticed on the Chinese list is that in that one row between the two yellow sections, so right after where you talked about the society slash association, Barry and Stefan, the Chinese word, which you see the two characters in the Chinese column, and maybe it's just the way I'm reading it, but it actually seems to say Red Society, not Red Cross Society. So again, it may be, as Stefan said, that these are the lists that are produced by the delegations in each country. And of course, I don't mean to pick on Chinese because I can't speak some of the other languages. So this may actually arise in some of the other national language variants that we have for some of the other entries. but it may be worth noting that at least for the Chinese entry and maybe for some others, some of the national language variants actually don't have the full word Red Cross line. In this case, it just says Red Society, not Red Cross Society. Thanks, Barry.
Thank you, Mary. Obviously, that is something I would never have picked up on, and that is on a very important point. And in fact, I believe staff will want some guidance from this group about how this goes to public comment. That specifically speaks to a current problem that we have. So rewind back to 2014 when the ICANN board instructed staff to temporarily reserve an original list of the Red Cross Society names. It turns out from that original Word document, and it looks like there was an additional carriage return, but what actually got reserved from the registry, it was from the Russian Red Cross Society, is a generic term of just society. And it was one of the, I believe it's .moscow.mokva, because they're familiar with the Russian language, were able to pick up on the fact that this uber generic term wound up getting reserved, and they've even actually had customers that wanted to reserve or to register that generic term. And so I guess somehow we're going to need to figure out a way how to avoid that. Obviously, we're dealing with, 150 or so potential different languages. And so I guess that's something to put in the back of this group's mind on how we can try to overcome that possibility, because first and foremost, as Mary points out, these aren't translations to Red Cross Society. They're perhaps can be argued a more generic term of Red Society, and how do we avoid that issue? And again, this kind of just reinforces why this matrix was being put together the way it was, is to try to help call out some of these issues. So I'll make that as a note and make sure that is documented in the meeting minutes. And I do believe this group is going to have to come up with some possible ways to get around this. Some of the languages, or at least at the very least, any UN6 type languages, we could perhaps pass these identifiers on to them to help confirm that they are indeed translations back to the English version. But beyond the UN6, how would we identify this type of issue?
Thanks, Barry. It's Thomas for the record. I'm not sure whether this is at all possible, but Marika or Mary might have an answer to this. Would it be possible to make the list part of the recommendation and the entries in the list conditional to them being the correct spelling / correct names, and have a clause in there whereby that can be rectified if need be? So I don't want to put anyone on the spot, but maybe you can check that. Go ahead, Barry, and then we'll move to Heather.
Okay. I guess just quickly to respond, and maybe I didn't understand the exact question, but I think the concern here is, at least from a staff perspective, is, once this gets published on the specification 5 list, that list is not meant to be a dynamically changed list. For example, and the main reason why staff has held off of correcting the example I raised with the Russian Red Cross Society and that generic term is that it was only one small edit to that list that would put a bigger burden on the registries of them having to update their systems for that one small change. So I guess ultimately the idea is that somehow we can identify all of these potential nuances and errors and make sure that we're completely 100% certain that we're not reserving something in error so that we don't have to go change it 6 weeks after we implement. Mary and Heather or Thomas?
Now, just before we move to Heather and Mary, because Mary might wish to respond to that as well, the idea was, Barry, and I appreciate your explanations about the list and the work for the registries, but the idea was that, you know, since we can't get 100% certainty that there are no errors in that list, and since if we have a finite list in the consensus policy, which would be binding, if we don't put any caveats or conditions into the language of the resolution, we might not have a chance to rectify things. And this is why I was asking whether there is a possibility procedurally to say that, you know, the list made an appendix to the resolution is conditional to its correctness, basically, so that we would have the opportunity to spot errors, that those can be updated, you know, and it could be updated over time, but then it wouldn't be too static. I think Heather raised her hand before Mary raised her hand, so let's go to Heather and then to Mary.
Thanks, Thomas. I admittedly come to this with a slightly different hat on here as Council Chair, and I'm mindful of the fact that the brief of this group is to prepare a finite list. So I take your point, Thomas, as to the utility of the list if it's not accurate, but I think if we're going to do that, it needs some really tight, really clever wordsmithing here that we're not then ending up with an interpretation of this list being dynamic. So my perspective on that, Thomas, thank you.
Thanks, Heather. That's helpful, and certainly the language would need to be like, you know, if there are typos in there or something like that, so that there is no risk of new strings creeping in. Mary.
Thanks, Thomas. And actually, I was going to pretty much say what Heather said. So first of all, the Council's expectation, I think, is that it has to be a set, certain, and finite list. So if there is going to be the possibility of updates or corrections, then I don't think it's just a resolution. I think that has to be in the actual policy itself. It will have to be very specific. So the basis, for example, will have to be that there is an error in the original list, which is a different matter from whether there was an omission or whether there was an inclusion that should not have been there. These are all very different. So there's the need for not just error correction, perhaps, but also the more overarching need for certainty and a limited list. We can certainly talk about how we can try and balance the two, but I think there is a distinction between correcting errors and on what basis, on whether there were any inclusions that should not have been there in the first place, and on what basis, and, you know, other circumstances like omissions, which, like I said, they're all very different. The group could obviously take the view that what's on the list is on the list, and that there definitely needs to then be a set procedure within the policy and published for correcting the list. If that's the way you want to go, then I agree that needs to be in the resolution, that needs to be in the published policy, but I think overall it still needs to be a finite list that's published for the registries. Thank you.
Yeah, I agree. Thanks very much, Mary and Heather. It's Thomas for the record. Let's hear more views. I mean, we can certainly take the view that we're just having a finite list and we need to talk about the exceptions that we, or the outliers, as Barry called them, in a moment. But do you think that it is worthwhile discussing some language on how to deal with errors? You know, I'm worried that we have things like Red Society or stuff like that on the list forever without any chance of at least removing things that shouldn't be on the list. The additions, I agree, are a completely different thing. And I'm also cognizant, I guess this call has been scheduled for an hour. We're 7 minutes past the hour already. 90 minutes? Okay, so then we're still fine. So let's hear some views on whether you think that we should try to work on sort of a rectification mechanism or language.
Thomas, I tell you what, just in the interest of time, I'll make note of this in the minutes, that this is a pretty big one that we should discuss at our next session, and I'll extract some of the conversation from the transcripts to put some context around it. I don't think we have enough people to try to solve it today, but it sounds like we have a partial path forward to at least put some guide rails around this issue.
That's fine. So why don't you then continue with your presentation?
All right, thank you. So I just want to highlight two more notions. I think these should be fairly easy to get through. So back to rows 559 to 581. Which is, again, for the Côte d'Ivoire, which I'm sure I'm mispronouncing. So as I mentioned, the translations over here in French are kind of a no-brainer for me. These will easily be converted into what we call U-labels when the conversion to a DNS label happens, these will be converted to what we call U-labels, which is the XN-dash-dash something, something, something. My concern here is that some of these English names, like the very first one, the Côte d'Ivoire Red Cross, contains a non-Latin character of the, it's not an umlaut O, I'm not sure what kind of O we call that. I'm concerned that if the algorithm that converts this to a DNS label will also make this converted to a U label, and we won't get to the point of where we're actually trying to reserve the English label. So I'm going to ask Stefan, and we can take this offline. But I'm hopeful that we can kind of take a creative license on this, that we strip out, or I would convert this O with the triangle on top to, for example, a normal O, an English O, so that we ensure that we actually get an English conversion to the DNS label. And like I said, we can take this one offline, but I just wanted to highlight that one. And then secondarily, just another highlight will take us down to row 943 to 950. And this is, I think, the only one that I saw that had this issue. But I'm not 100% certain. But the Red Cross Society of Guinea-Bissau looks like they formally use a hyphen between their two names, or I'm sorry, the two words used to make up their country name. What will happen is that if I were to convert this with the DNS label, it's going to actually put two hyphens in between the word. And so what I'm proposing is that those also be removed so that we get one version where the two words that make up the country name are collapsed together without it, and that we wind up with just one of the hyphens in between. Again, the algorithm for the DNS conversion will collapse a space, and where a space would normally occur will also input a hyphen. So while we have almost 4,000 identifiers listed in this list, including the non-Latin character translations, ultimately that DNS label algorithm will probably spit out about, I'm guessing, 10,000 total strings that would ultimately be reserved. And essentially it's going to be it's almost going to be two for every English one, and then one at the very least, if not two, when it converts non-English identifiers. So I just wanted to highlight that one for you as well. Obviously, there's still a lot more to go through the list. For example, the use of Republic and some others. But in terms of the meeting minutes, I think we have a path forward. So I'm going to stop sharing my screen at this point. And I would like to take the group over a quick review of a very much draft preliminary recommendations. The original desire was to have the full draft report available for the group to review. I think it's clear that we have a fair amount of work ahead of us just on the definitive list, let alone the report. So I'm comforted by the fact that we have a little bit more time. So if you'll just give me 5 minutes, I'm going to just walk through the high-level structure of these preliminary draft recommendations. I don't even think Mary has even had a time to read through it in great detail yet. So none of this is formal, and all of this is wide open and subject to change however the group wishes to go. The concept of this approach was essentially based off of our high-level deliberations. For the first half of our deliberations was essentially about the legal basis by which these strings would be reserved or deserve the reservation protection. And then the second half is getting to the definitive list. So that kind of same structure applies to how this is set up as well. But you'll take note in the very first section that the direction of this working group was, you know, based off of the amendment process from the GNSO operating procedures and working group guidelines, and had a direct instruction from the GNSO council, which is pasted here in the very first page. Which ultimately section A is, you know, should these identifiers be reserved and should they have an exception procedure if they are reserved? So the first section of the preliminary agreed recommendations and is section 2.1.1. And the first recommendation is that the reconvened working group does, in fact, confirm the GNSO Council's proposed amendment as outlined in its resolution in May 2017, whereby a definite list of full names and now is what the 191 Red Cross societies and the full names of the ICRC and IFRC and Red Crescent societies via this agreed definitive list be placed into Specification 5 of the base GTLD registry agreement. You'll notice that I have some comments over here onto the side that I think we also need to work out. I will remind the working group that this is for all GTLDs, not just the new GTLDs, and there's still a handful of TLDs delegated prior to ICANN's existence, really. Or certainly the registry agreements of these legacy TLDs. I really don't like the term legacy, but basically registry agreements prior to 2014 that haven't been renewed yet have a different method for highlighting the list of reserve names. And so the main example is .com. When you look at that registry agreement, it actually goes points towards Appendix 6 versus quote-unquote Specification 5 of the registry agreement. I point this out in detail, and which is includes a subsection called Recommendation Details. And why I'm proposing to be very prescriptive to this is I'm trying to eliminate any ambiguity for what seems like this will eventually be implemented by ICANN staff, and specifically why Dennis Chang is on the call. The desire here is that we be as prescriptive as possible in these details so that they really have nothing to deliberate or determine when this is pushed over to the IRT, and they can fast-track implementation and make it as easy as possible. Again, kind of circling back to some of the lessons learned in implementing the other recommendations. So that's why these details are very prescriptive as they are, and I'm sure they could still use more prescription. The second recommendation under this section, which is, again, confirming the council's instruction to determine whether the amendment will work, is, in fact, that the exception procedure be created whereby the Red Cross societies or representatives can eventually go register these names. The detail here is that there really is no need for this group to create or determine an exception procedure, as one has already been implemented for the policy that I mentioned at the beginning of the call, which is called the Protection of IGO, INGO Identifiers in All GTLE Policy, Consensus Policy, and the link is there. The point being is that it's already been created. It's already a part of consensus policy. We just need to attach on to that. But I think it's worthy of making it a recommendation because specifically the GNSO Council pointed it out specifically to this reconvened working group. Lastly, the second section, 2.1.2, is recommendations in addition to the proposed amendment as instructed by the GNSO Council. And again, this is just to reinforce what I was mentioning about trying to be overly prescriptive of making it easy for when we get to implementation at some point down the road. But recommendation 3 is essentially talking about future changes to this reservation list and the use of the variant criteria or variant index or however we want to title it. I tried to keep the recommendation language itself pretty short, but, you know, at a high level that the variations are based off of official name, common name, country of designation, use of definitive article, use of terms like society, national, and official languages. And we can probably will need to adapt that based on some of the other trends that we saw in the use of these terms as they're defined by these particular countries and their legal name. And the recommendation details is where I think this group needs to spend a lot of time on and making sure that we get this correct. So the recommendation details of recommendation number 3 are, in fact, this variant index or this variant criteria that define the list. So again, it starts with the official name. Moving over to page 3, talks about the common name and all of the text underneath it where certain terms can be used with or without it, such as the country it represents, the use of the term or the definitive article, such as the terms like society, national. And then the third component is national language and what is listed down there. Again, I thank Stefan for putting that together or formalizing what we had on a previous draft list that we had been using, but for sure the group will want to spend a lot of extra effort to ensure that we have this variant index criteria list shored up. Fourth recommendation is also in relation to future changes of this reservation list, and it's essentially just to reinforce that there is already a process as defined from the IGO-INGO consensus policy. Essentially, the implementation of that policy for IGO names, for the IOC, and for the Red Cross umbrella considers the GAC as the authoritative channel by which any of these changes will occur. So for the purposes of the Red Cross, at assuming or hypothetically that a new society is formed, they would engage with the GAC leadership. GAC leadership would notify ICANN.org as well as the GNSO of this proposed change, and then the process would work its way out. The biggest proponent of that, or biggest component of that, is that the GNSO is also informed of this change, which was based on some feedback that we had received a couple of meetings ago in the implementation of that consensus policy. But again, ultimately, there is no reason for this working group to create a process. There's one defined in the consensus policy that exists today. And the last thing I want to draw your attention to, and this is mostly for you, Stefan, because I believe it falls outside of the scope of ICANN and certainly the GNSO, but in the case where a new society is formed and it's working through the process of its formal adoption into international law, at some point you'll want to trigger in your process to engage the GAC early so that ICANN.org and the GNSO can sign off on that change, and that updates to that reservation list can occur before there's any public announcement of that new society. That way we can avoid front-running of anybody trying to register names before the actual implementation begins. And this group may want to have some dialogue about that, but it's certainly something that stuck out in my mind. So that's kind of the general approach to the recommendations framework. As I mentioned, way open to edits, improvements, and enhancements, especially since this is the first time people have saw it. So I'll stop there and turn it back to you, Thomas.
Thanks very much, Barry, and very impressed with your work. So thanks for that. Sorry, my headset was just running out of battery. I hope you guys can hear me. So thanks very much for all the work. Are there any questions with respect to the language of the recommendation?
And I should point out, Thomas, I think there's a fair amount of action items for staff coming out, mostly related to the definitive list. But in parallel, I'll be working with Mary to refine the overall draft. And so hopefully early next week, we can have the entire report submitted for the working group to start review. And as nuances about the recommendations, such as variants or whatever, need to be updated, we can make those changes in flight to the list or to the document. So mm-hmm. I just want to let you know that that'll be sent to the list very shortly.
Thanks very much. So do we have any instant feedback to the language of the recommendation or other observations that staff can take into account when further refining this? Are there any objections to staff working on this as proposed by Barry? That doesn't seem to be the
Thomas,
case. So Barry and
Thomas.
Team. Yeah, Stefan,
okay.
Go ahead.
This is Stefan Hankins for the record. Thank you, intern, for all the work that has been done. Apologies for the, the Red Society name. I'm surprised because, we put a lot of effort in explaining exactly where we were heading and what we were authorized to do. But as I note from Mary's lines in the chat, there is this possibility indeed that the National Society in National Red Cross Society in China is known by the name Red Society. And then, of course, if we define usual name, commonly used name, then, there might have been there. But we did try to do the best we could. There are a couple of mistakes, but I'm just wondering how we could find a way indeed to get this at least to get this proofread. And it's just coming to my mind, whether the forum of the GAC, might be a possibility, but it would make matters very complicated and very lengthy. As regards the recommendations, I myself saw them earlier this afternoon. I was interested to see that there might be a possibility for this to somehow be flagged or to be extended and to the so-called legacy GTLDs, and it's always been an interrogation for us, how we could indeed ensure that those protections are not just for the new GTLDs. So that's something that I think is legitimate indeed, for the group to consider. And my third point is, reading through this, it is important that before it's circulated broadly, the group be able to indeed comment. There are some elements in there that are incorrect, such as, for example, how a national society becomes a member of the International Red Cross, Red Crescent movement, and so on. So that there are some elements there that are slight mistakes that need to be corrected. So it is important that we be able to comment on it. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Stefan. And it's good advice. I think we're going to have that feedback loop on the list, and that sort of links to the question asked by Mary in the chat on how what we're going to do in terms of scheduling the next call. So, Barry, you were saying that you think that the refining of the report can be done within a week or so. Can I ask those who are not speaking to please mute their mics? That would be great. We have a lot of background noise. So, Barry, can you confirm how much time you will need to get this refined?
Hi, Thomas. I believe that, hey, Crystal, I believe that's your line that's not muted. Thank you.
Nope, it wasn't me. I'm muted.
Call in user 4. Right, looks fine. Thank you, Thomas. So, I think it's going to take, it'll probably be middle of next week that I would hope to have both, let me back up. In the next couple of days, I hope to have the updated meeting minutes and circle back with highlighting some of the extracts from the transcript and everything we discussed today to just shore up this particular meeting. As a part of that, probably another day to have the list, the next version of the list worked on, and some of those variants that we discussed. And so hopefully by middle of next week, maybe later of next week, that we have the entire draft report together. I'm mostly kind of leaning on Mary for she's much better at documenting this. And for sure, Stefan, I apologize if I misstated any of the process. I'm a spreadsheet guy. I'm not a writer. So most definitely there will be more than ample opportunity for this group to make edits and correct any misstatements that I've made in this very first draft. So for the most part, Monday meeting minutes and kind of capturing what was discussed in the group, Wednesday-ish to Thursday that we'll have an update to the definitive list and a draft of the report.
Okay. So with GDD taking place next week, I think it wouldn't be a good idea to have that conflict with our next meeting. So my suggestion would be to get the notes out as you discuss, and if you could highlight the questions that we've asked ourselves today about the potential, about the outliers and how we're going to deal with those and the exemption process, should there be any, or rectification process, then we can get the discussion started on the list. And then let me check with the group whether you guys would be fine to schedule the next meeting where we hopefully can do a consensus call in 2 weeks from today.
And so that would be the 24th of May that we would target a meeting. I'd note that there's also ENTA and RightsCon going on those weeks as well.
Well, can we afford to push it back more? So there's this council meeting on the 24th. So what are you guys thinking?
Thomas, mm-hmm. What I can do, I'll take the action to send out a doodle poll, and I'll try to, if not the 24th, maybe we can shoot for early morning the 25th or something along those lines. I'll provide a few options, and we'll see what comes out.
That's awesome. So since we have 4 minutes past the end of this meeting, let's adjourn so we have our action items clear. And, I don't want us to end this call before applauding you guys for all the hard work that you've done, both Stefan and team, as well as particularly you, Barry, for analyzing the list and, talking us through all the changes. That has been a hell of a job. Thanks so much. Much appreciated. Let's have the recording ended. Thanks and goodbye. Bye-bye.
Thank you all.
Thanks, Thomas, Barry, Stefan, and everyone.
Thank you so much. The meeting has been adjourned. Operator, please stop the recordings. Have a great day, everyone.